Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. We're back with a surprise episode. We did not think we were recording today. So it's me and Luke. If you're watching on YouTube, I don't even know if these are on YouTube. I look disheveled, but that's okay because we're so excited to talk Midnight Club episode 7 and 8 because I am dying to watch 9 and 10, especially after that 8 reveal. 7 and 8 felt very like personal growth for the character episodes, you know, like plot moving still, but more so growth for the characters. What do you think?
Yeah, they felt different than the first 6. And to be honest, this is something I was scared of, and I brought it up at the end of episode 6, how once the ritual happened, I thought it was premature because everything was just going to change and everything was going to get chaotic. We're not going to get these normal Midnight Club meetings and get these fun stories that I really look forward. We got a surprise one that came out of nowhere in episode 8 with Natsuki and Amesh. But again, it still felt off because the charm for me so far has been these Midnight Club meetings and getting to learn about these characters through them. So just, this is what I was scared of when we started doing the ritual already at episode 6. But I also do love the cliffhanger that we stopped on. We've been lucky with how at the end of every even episode, something crazy happens because my God, episode 8 ending was made for our podcast. I feel like it's sad that Jimmy's not here to really go into it because, you know, he loves talking KevBot sketchiness.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, it was just, but again, like it was a calm before the storm of the final two. And I think the biggest shocker here is in episode 7 is that Anya truly died.
I know. We all said that we thought that, right? I forget what we put on the board.
I was the soft one. I said that I thought she was going to be the one that actually got healed, but turns out someone else is going to get healed, which is awesome. That's going to be so fun dope. To kind of guess. Not a lot of options for that, but we'll get to that when we get to it.
Yeah. So we can just jump right in. I mean, like Luke said, Anya does die, but they do it in a fun way where it's just so fun. They do it in a fun way where you open with kind of like Anya in her own head. She's in a seemingly like in a coma or something after they do the ritual. So we get this alternate universe Anya where the ritual worked and we're X amount of, I think it's like 2 years ago or maybe 1 year since it all happened. She has some longer hair. She's working at a grocery store. She's obviously depressed, but she can walk around. She's got a prosthetic. She's constantly peering into this ballet studio and she's got this boss who's seemingly looking out for her. She's in like a grief therapy, which we find out it's really just her talking the whole time because this is her fantasy kind of brain doing this. But she's talking about how she survived and she's having survivor's guilt in the therapy. She doesn't know what to do. When she goes through and says, like, my friends died, it didn't work for them. Like, we tried, we did the ritual 6 more times. Everyone's been dead a year now. And she even says something like Amesh's was the worst of them all, the death or something. Do you think there's going to be any truth to that moving forward? Do you think that that's going to be true?
Well, I at this point, you don't really know that she's in a coma and that she's not making all this up in her head. But before I jump into what you just asked there, did you think it was the future right when it opened up? Because I did not. And I'm kind of embarrassed about that. But
remember when last episode, when I was like, I saw the still from episode 7, I kind of know where they're going with it. I thought it was going to be some sort of like alternate universe type. That's what I thought. I was like, she has like different hair. It's just going to be like, she's in a, I thought it was going to be something like that, but they did trick me with it being in the future and stuff. I kind of figured it. I didn't know if it was going to be one of those things where, oh shit, we're in the future. And then they're going to go backwards and show us what happened. I'm glad it wasn't. I'm glad that was just false, but I'm thinking that there could be some weird truth in it. I don't know.
Well, at first, I really thought it was the past right before she went to Bright Cliff. There wasn't really any obvious signs, I thought, that right away that it was the future. And then, of course, when she goes to those meetings and drops the thing about them having all died, Amesh's was the worst. And then she also kind of implies that Alanka died later because she said dead a year now. I don't know if she was just summing it up for all of them or Alanka somehow lived because she was like the leader of the ritual or something. Either way, it doesn't actually matter at this point because it didn't work for her and it didn't give her, it didn't treat her terminal illness. But it totally, before I realized it was a coma and I thought it was truly the future, when they started bringing in the flashes of the other stories before it gets it blows so up, like first with Luke and Becky. Yeah. I was thinking like, oh my God, dude, this is going to be the best twist ever if he pulls it off where somehow it is reality. But then, yeah, of course, it flipped. It was still a great self-contained episode, but I thought there was a chance where Flanagan was about to get crazy on us and these stories were real life and then different. I don't know.
Let me ask you a question. Did you watch these episodes once or twice? Because this is the first time I've almost every other podcast we've done, I watched each episode twice. Since this was a surprise ep and we did it so fast, I only watched each episode once. So I was lucky. I'm glad I took my notes on the first watch. Did you notice that when she's walking past the ballet studio that's next to the hardware store, there was a guy with gloves and a hammer on in his hand? And I was like, it wasn't Kevin. So I was like, oh, that's just it. That's interesting. It wasn't Kevin. But then later, it is Kevin.
Right. I thought he was potentially going for a thing where it was all these stories were real, but they weren't based on the characters. So we were seeing their counterparts, but it quickly devolved into Luke being Luke. And it's just all being in her head. But it was still like a mind fuck.
It's almost like it could have been how they do the opener of season four of The Magicians, how they're different actors and they're like slightly different looking. It could have been like that. Like they based it off of different like things that actually were real. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, Kevin's mom, the bloody hammer, like the kids in the video game shop, all of it. It was so good. Scary Natsuki loved that. Loved bringing her back. It really, I mean, it doesn't really come to anything. It may. We'll see. But for now, she ends up being in her bed, which one I liked that they kept showing the Midnight Club stuff through the radio at 12 every night. That was cool because they were sitting outside of her door doing the Midnight Club stuff. But she wakes up so weird. There was like a baby in like ink on the ceiling and then it turns into a skeleton and then it gets her.
So that was still in her mind, though, right? Yeah. Because it's like the shadow monster kind of actually forming. And it's weird because that black skull skeleton figure is in the promos of pictures. If you like search Midnight Club and stuff. So I've been waiting for it, but it was kind of always in my head that it was just the extension of the shadow monster that's been everywhere. So I was waiting for this to happen. And it seems like the shadow monster is what she probably truly saw and what they summoned in the ritual. But maybe the ritual needs to kill someone to heal the people. I don't really know how they're going to make that more than symbolism. It could just be straight up symbolism of like just being taken and actually dying. But it was cool that she actually woke up for a second, right? Like she really truly opened her eyes.
She got to hear Natsuki's story, which was the special Midnight Club from the hallway because Stanton got them in trouble and was like, I don't even know what to do with you fucking kids. What the fuck are you doing down there? But I have some words about Stanton. I'm thinking she knows more than she lets on because I think in the last episodes we were like, is this bitch just oblivious? What is going on? Now I think she actually does know some stuff. But Natsuki tells this really sweet story about how it worked and Anya vanished just like JJ did for a week. She gets healed. They all get like a rent controlled apartment together, a co-ed apartment, and Rhett comes back and they live happily ever after. She gets a pink Jeep with a skull on it. Not three kids, really sweet. And I think they did a really good job with Anya's character. I also think that she's definitely going to make contact somehow in the next two episodes. Like she has to. But in the real, they do say that in the real ritual, she passed out. Like Alanka says, like, is apologizing. She's so sorry. And they're all there for her and she's not alone. But then, all
right. I'm thinking she was put right into a coma from the ritual, like, and from that whole flash or whatever she saw. But it was a cool hypothetical happy ending for the whole squad if it worked out the way that they thought it would. But then when she wakes up for real, she actually dies. And that kind of took me by surprise because I thought she was going to wake up like for real. And then it just skips to another janitor scene where they're talking about the death. And that was like, holy shit, this is actually real. They burned her body. They cremated it. They have her ashes. Yeah. But did any of us guess Anya as the first one to die?
Yes, somebody did because they were like, I think she's the one. Someone said maybe it's Anya because she's the one who's going to actually reach out. And, yeah, and like she says in the note, which we'll get to, she's the one who's actually going to do the thing.
I'm going to find it because I have it written down, but keep going because I think we're
but yeah, just so about Bobby Longstreet, Mr. Robert Longstreet, also just killing it in this scene. I'm glad we got another one with him. He's the only one I'll let comfort me in these sad moments. He's always dropping knowledge bombs and truth bombs. One should die proudly when it's no longer possible to live proudly. And he says, it's not the length of life, but the depth of life. And he says, Anya lived deeply. She's passionate and all these things. So it was really sad. And we get an absolutely magicians inspired sing along later, just like when Redacted passes in the Magicians and they do the sing along that we all love so much. But yeah, before that, Stanton is questioning her about the Paragon book and why they're in the basement. Not much more to that other than there's a scene next with Shasta, who is like, I just think it didn't work for her. I just think it didn't work for Anya. And she's such like, she acts like she knows everything. And I just believe her. I'm kind of on her side. I'm like, yeah, no, it just didn't work for Anya. It'll work for someone else.
Yeah, I thought I was going to get more out of this conversation, like get a better read on her. But you really don't get that until next episode. I feel like we have a whole conversation to be had there about her personality. But yeah, here she just talks more about the symbol being connected to things greater than the Paragon, and she keeps re-emphasizing the fact that she's unrelated to the cult and they're here for bigger and better things. And like, now you're starting to see, maybe it's more in the next episode, that the people that she's with are kind of their own cult, regardless of what she wants to say. Like when she offers Alanka a position to be in their group, they all just stop and look at her for a second. I was like, okay, yeah, what the fuck was that, man?
Yeah, I don't know. It's, why would she want to be there? Shasta seems like charismatic and like cool and whatever, but the rest are just seem like brainwashed cultist people.
At this point, is it still in the air? Do we think she's Julia? Do we think she's Athena? Do we think she's Regina? Because maybe we save that conversation until the second part, because there's the information we get in episode 8 kind of shapes that. So I'll leave that for now. But yeah, pasta is starting to get a little bit more shady.
Shasta pasta. Yeah, she, anyway, we'll get there. Stan also gave Alanka the box with all of Anya's belongings. Anya left everything to Alanka. Tim shows up to console her for a bit and then kind of bounces. But it was a nice little hopper moment. I liked that. But brings the box. Good guy. Brings the box and reads the kind of last note from Anya, which was like totally so Anya. It was awesome. She says that basically the Greeks thought your minds get wiped and that's why no one reaches out after they die. She said, if anyone can reach out and send a sign, unambiguous and definite, I'm the bitch, I'm fucking doing it, which I adore. And then Stanton shows up and is like, what the fuck? She's like, you think I didn't know you were coming down here? You think I didn't hear every creak and crack in this old shitty house? Basically, she's like, you guys are idiots. Year after year, like the faces change, but everyone does this. And she's like, as long as there's like stories being told, I allow it. And Stan's pretty correct when she's like, I don't have many rules. Maybe just don't do blood sacrifices in my basement. Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. She was so freaking cool in this scene. And like, I'm starting to think again, like she could be a normal person that's just trying to handle everything at face value. And she knows about the history of the place, but what are you going to do? Because she really is cool. She's like Mark, like they both don't care what everybody does. I didn't think she was going to be as forthcoming as she is in this scene, but it makes sense too, because we've been bringing up plot holes about like, how are you not here in this freaking elevator all night? And she has, she knows, she's aware. So that this was some points for Stanton as like a well-written character. I just didn't know where it was going to go. And it actually, she's pretty much in a lot of these important scenes, because she talks about, or I mean, right here is when she gets the Athena journal, right?
Yep. And she ends up burning it, which I don't think it's actually going to burn in there. I feel like it's going to be like perfectly untouched when they go and try and like find it. I feel like it's going to be fine, which is just
Is it supported that she can still be potentially Athena having to burn that?
When Stanton says, is on the phone and she's crying because she learned that, I think it's at the end of this episode, she learns that somebody's healed. And she's like, I'm like frantic. It, I don't know. It just brought up some old stuff is what she's saying. They're just bringing up old stuff. And that's the one line that I've been clinging to being like, she still can be sketchy. She still can be somebody. And, but other than that, like Stan's a good character. Whereas I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but when Alanka's like, who is it? Tell me. She's like, when I get concrete evidence, I will tell the person, Alanka, please. Like, can you imagine having that hope again and then getting it ripped away? Like, what the fuck? And that so that's where Alanka's like pushing a little too hard. I'm like, girl, please. Yeah. Stan's actually right here. Just like, let it slide. But
yeah. And the phone call itself, I mean, do we want to open it up for that too? And we could just go back to the,
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Let's just go through the rest of Stanton stuff. Because when she's on the phone, you're right. I wrote down exactly what you said. Alanka overhears her carrying on about digging up like old stuff. And to me, that's either a direct link to Athena's journal, being like, she's literally bringing up my old journal that I wrote about my crazy mom who's out there trying to sell kids on this new cult, basically, or this old cult. And then it was that, or it could be Julia Jane's healing. And if it's connected to that, then it makes sense because we already have confirmation. She was there when Julia got healed. It could be either or. I don't think she was on the phone talking with Shasta. I feel like that would make sense, right?
And she does say, like, I've only gotten a call like this one other time, which is, again, another thing that Julia Jane is the other time. You know, that's the other time she got the call like this. But she's got to be someone. She can't just be this, like, doctor in the house. Like, it can't be true. Because then, I mean, we're jumping all over the place. Let's just go back real quick. They throw Anya's ashes in the lake in a really sad moment. Sherry's playing fucking Green Day on the cello or whatever the fuck that is. Yeah. And at first I was like, not Green Day. And then I was like, oh, wait, this is actually really sad. And I
agree. I had the same reaction. The beginning, I was like, okay. And then it got really good. They all joined in and I just got a little bit of chills and it was sad and it was cute. But of course, it ends with that awkward moment between Alanka and Kevin.
I know. And Kevin made the move. It was not Alanka. Kevin went straight up to her face and then Alanka leaned in and he was like, no. It's like, oh, you piece of shit. Kevin, you're
that was shocking. That was shocking to me that he was the one that didn't lean in.
I know.
Yeah.
He's just acting up. He's acting up. I mean, just wait.
Now we got flags out the ass now for after next episode. So correct. I don't know. We're going to find out what his game is probably by next episode, I would think.
The way this episode ends is another run in with the old lady and old man. So I don't think we've actually seen the old man since the pilot and in the bathroom at the frat or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's like, darling, hey. And the old lady's like, I'm starving. I'm hungry again. So, I mean, it's just Kevin in a wig.
This is perfect because this is what Paul was saying. This kind of fits into Paul's theory about them needing to feed off the terminally ill kids. And I don't know if they're the people that are going to be causing like the actual deaths and like stealing of the life forces of these dying kids, or like, I don't know. I don't know if the cult needs to be involved for them to actually eat, because it doesn't seem like they have a lot of physical power. I don't know what's going on there. And Alanka's crazy, man. I would never be in that room by myself for the rest of my entire fucking life.
No, just go sleep with Cherie.
Same room for the rest of my life. Like, there's no freaking way. Are you kidding me?
Do you think that the old lady and maybe the old man are the ones who put the don't? I have two theories that are popping up right now. The old lady and the old man put the don't because to do the ritual is actually going to save people and they want to feed.
That's a good guess because they're definitely anti-kids and there's no way they're trying to stop them from doing anything that would help them because they are quite literally feeding on them. That's a good guess because it doesn't make sense that it was Stanton. That was like a thing I threw out last time we talked about it. I think we talked ourselves out of it being Sandra being weird about it and like having a snuck down there to try and convince him otherwise. And Shasta wanted the ritual and so did Kevin. So basically all of our sketchy people are off. Like it doesn't make sense.
I'm doubling down on my theory saying that it's actually Kevin who did it, but under the sleepwalking influence of the old lady. Because doesn't he say at the end of that episode, like, not again or something like that at the very end of the episode? I think the old lady is like acting with him.
So does that mean that the old man needs to also be have like a
he's a only body. In the mirror, though. He doesn't have a body. He's only in the reflections and in the mirror. We haven't seen him like bopping around, but the woman has like. Yeah, I don't know. I was going to say the woman has a form, but I'm only saying that because Anya was like, whoosh, and it was him. It was Kevin. So I think the form is actually Kevin, but it's like creating this like illusion and ghost work that Ilonka can see.
And do we think the shadow monster is its own separate entity, or is it working with the ghost? That's another question, right?
I don't know. It's got to be one entity. It can't be two entities. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean,
but if the ghosts are the ones that did the don't because they think that the ritual actually helps people, that would mean that the black skull thing is not their friend.
Yeah.
Because that would make them on opposite sides if that was true.
I was going to say that they have the same boss, but now maybe not.
And they're fighting for that promotion. Yeah. Throwing one off each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's that episode. We were like, rest in peace, Anya. What a great character. One of the goats of the Flaniverse for sure. She is has great lines. I thought they did a really good job fleshing her out in, I mean, what, 7 episodes? So the episode was called Anya, rightfully so. She deserved her own episode. She was dope.
I don't think she's gone, though. I think we're getting her breaking through and reaching Ilonka. I think that's exactly how it's going to have to go. She's too good for her to not be in the last 2 episodes. She's too much of a force here.
I agree. All right. So episode 8, Road to Nowhere, titled after Natsuki's story that she tells a mesh, which ends up being a true story, but she had some good flair in the middle of it. I dug it, but I just want to say up top, like, this episode was shot in a really cool way. Like, the direction was great. I didn't Google who directed it. It's probably Mike, but I'm not sure. Seems like there were some continuous shots through the set with Amesh like walking around the house too, which we know he loves to do, or maybe doesn't love to do, but he's known for. But yeah, so Ilonka, who passed out in the last episode, is now awake. And goes and beelines it to Stanton, just drilling her with questions, like we said, and being a kind of a brat, not going to lie. And then when they're in therapy, Stanton's preaching trust and honesty, and she's like, honesty? That's what you want? It's like, oh, girl, please, just relax.
Do we have a confirmation of how much time passed? I know we've been jumping a little bit. No.
I don't think so. I would say days, weeks, maybe I wouldn't say more than like a couple weeks. At all. But I mean, time is of the essence with these kids. It can't jump too much.
Right. Yeah.
I would say this episode is the one where we've seen Amesh struggle the most, you know, like before. I don't think we've seen him like struggle once. Now, when he like eats it on the table with Mark, that's the first time we were like, oh.
Well, Paul brought up when he was slurring his speech a little bit in the first couple episodes.
Right. I forgot about that.
It is subtle, and it is seeming like it's getting worse for him, and him specifically, because we kind of agreed that he has the harshest terminal illness that can come up on him quicker because he was the newest, but he still has the closest death date too. So he can go at any time. And I think that's kind of what Anya was saying in her coma thing, like maybe Amesh somehow connected with his disease was getting it worse, and that's kind of seems likely. Yeah, he can go whenever. It's really sad.
I hate that because he's the best. He's so sweet. But before we get there, after therapy, Ilonka is talking to Kevin and tells him, of course, because she just can't keep anything to herself. And he's kind of her confidant, even though he's the most skeptical confidant in the entire world. He is literally like just batting down every shot she takes for everything. And immediately she's like, I know who to go to. Stanton's not the only one with answers. Run straight to Shasta, of course, because Shasta is her girl. And up to this point, like, Shasta hasn't done anything for Ilonka or us to be like sketched by. We know the history, and that's why we think Shasta's sketchy. But as far as Ilonka knows, I mean, I guess she knows the history too. I don't know.
This is the craziest scene ever. The biggest shift for Shasta's character, because she goes in her first half of the scene is just the whole informative part about talking about the black bile creating cancer, like the balance of like their history and trying to make sure that's how you actually cure diseases. She gets back into the healing vortex. We're not letting that go. That's going to have some sort of payoff. And then she says, like, basically everybody has been drawn to this area for a reason. Like, there's bad radar. It's kind of like the Bermuda Triangle in that way. Like, there's people being drawn for all different reasons, and they're all coming to the forest for the healing qualities. And that's cool. But that we kind of figured that out ourselves. Like, that's where her first interaction led us to believe. So I feel like we're going to get a real answer when someone is cured, at like how it's kind of connected in that way. And to see if there's anything devious going on, because it seems like when the conversation kept going, she got a little bit more creepier and creepier. She was asking about the journal, saying like, I need that. Can you give me that journal? Yeah. We'll save the people. And then she's like, what do you mean? Like, we'll save your friends. And then we're going to save everybody. So that's like that's the idea in words of like a main villain before you know it's the main villain.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. This was the first time it felt like Shasta's been giving her the wellness things, giving her whatever, kind of softening her up. Now it feels like she's like needing things from Alanka, like needing them. So yeah, I agree that she starts sounding a little more maniacal.
She's like impatient. And she's, she's like, she wants it to pay off all these meetings that we've been seeing. And to be honest, this almost takes her out of the contention of being Julia Jane for me, because Julia Jane already had access to the journal, because the journal was what was hidden by the Dewey Decimal System, right?
Yeah.
So what power could the journal have for the person that wrote, or for the person that like already had it? Like, Julia already had it in the past. She's the one
and
who
read it and everything.
Yeah. So why would she care about needing it? But it does make sense to me that Regina Ballard, AKA Acesto, was that her name?
Acesto.
Acesto would need it, because if her daughter, Athena, AKA Stanton, potentially was taking all these key notes and has some information that Regina needs, like that makes more sense to me than Julia needing a journal she already had possession of.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, it's kind of making me think that is true, but it's also one of those things where it's like, I own this textbook for a long time. Doesn't mean I memorized the textbook. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Could be like, you actually need the physical thing. I don't know. It's a good point.
But no, because the physical thing. No, yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
And then Stanton burning it, like, that to me is what I'm thinking in my head, was the old stuff being brought up, was her old journal. So like, she burned it. She's trying to get away from all of this. She's trying to end it.
Damn.
That's just where I'm at right now. And maybe Julia, but then is Julia Jane really not going to be a character that was healed and given like long life in the same way that Regina was? Because it feels like
that.
If one of them's still in the story because they get partial like youth, immortality, or whatever you want to call it, the other one should also be there, because the ritual would have worked on both of them.
I agree.
So it feels like they should both be characters. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm like, I had a thought of, I think I already said it though, about Stan being Athena and being like, okay, I'm against what my mom was trying to do. So I went to school to become a legit doctor. You know, I think I already said that last episode, but like, it makes sense that Athena would be like, fuck that. Like, my mom is crazy. So she went back, decided to become a real doctor. But it's like, if you really said fuck that, maybe she bought that specific land so other people don't use it for bad things. You know,
that
what
all tracks. That's exactly what I'm thinking in my head. And also, I mean, it is possible that Stan is Julia, because she's been weird about all this. And then her saying like that brought up old stuff. Obviously, she would be like traumatized by her time there and having to go through the ritual. She probably watched people die and stuff. Like, that could also be her. I just think right now where I'm landing is I no longer have Shasta as a potential candidate for Julia, which it didn't happen until literally episode 8.
Should we watch Midnight Club later?
We really could.
We really could. Done, I would love a drink in my hand and watching Midnight Club. Anyway,
so
now we've got Amesh and Mark. He eats it going on the bed, like I said. The only new symptom he has is physical comedy, so don't worry about him. He's really fine. But he ends up going to Natsuki and they kiss, but she's being weird. We all find, I won't say she's being sketchy because we find out why, and her story is incredible. But he like wants to do a date, a nature walk, and she seems like she's fallen into one of her depression things again, but you can kind of tell that she doesn't want to hurt his feelings, and she isn't dumping him. Like, I knew she wasn't like having second thoughts on the kiss, because they kiss right away. She kisses him on the cheek. it just is like, oh, what's up? What's wrong with her? Which we obviously find out later, but we'll skip to go to.
Yeah, we'll come back to that to do Sherry and Spencer's story.
I love that. Cutting his hair and that whole conversation is so funny. He's like, do you know how to cut hair? Or are you just saying? And she's like, who cares?
Basically. No, she's like, that is what I said.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Did you say it or did you do it? He's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And they have a conversation about their queerness and it's really cute. And obviously we know Spence's family was against it, right? But Spence was really close with his family before. So coming out to his family was this like big dramatic thing, did not go well. And he's kind of asking Sherry, like, well, wow, you're so brave. Like, I can't believe it went well, like whatever. And she's like, I'm not brave. You're brave. My parents didn't even hear me. They don't care enough for it to have been brave. They just truly don't care enough about me. She's like, no, you're the brave one because your family like cared. And that is one devastating for both parties. Like, he came out and it went terribly with people he loves and people who used to love him at least. And now Sherry's like, I can say whatever the fuck I want and they would not even bat an eye. She could be like, I murdered somebody.
That explains what her personality, why her personality is so like this. She just says things. They can be shocking. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. She just wants reactions from people because she never got them from her parents. That explains a lot of her character.
Yeah. And I'm sure she just grew up saying outlandish things, trying to get a rise out of her parents, you know?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Whatever you have to do to get the attention. But they go to Mark. And at first I was like, what are they about to say to Mark? I thought he was going to maybe apologize for having been a dick or something. But he's like, we need to do something brave, but I need a ride. And hot Mark in this like fucking leather jacket he's wearing later. Like, you better stop. Come on. I also need him to be a bigger character. What do you think? He's just basically, me and Alex are now two episodes into Bly. And Raul Coley is basically like the sweetest angel cook in the whole world. And they're reminding me of each other because like Raul in that show does not do anything bad. He's just a sweet, pure, good angel. And it seems like that's what Riley's going to be. But I want more for him. I want more like than other than just to be like the sweet nurse practitioner. I don't know.
I just don't think there's been enough clues for us to really have picked up on him being anything but sweet and just surface level like that. It is weird because I did think he was going to have a way bigger part. And now I'm starting to think there's almost no shot of him being, maybe he's the freaking, the body for the male ghost. Like, I don't know. Like, I really can't think of anything that would put him back into the story besides just being a caretaker. That's probably set up for a really horrible death or something in the finale that could still kind of happen. I don't know. I don't know what but this whole like, back of their storyline was just awesome for each of the characters involved. It's pretty self-contained compared to the main plot of the show, but it does a lot for these three characters, maybe less so for Mark and more so for Spence. But his speech to his mom was fantastic as well.
Oh my God. It's the best. And he had to do it. This was kind of his Hail Mary to his mom. I mean, you would think that in this situation, his mom refuses to come to him. His dad's kind of avoiding having Spence try at any cost. Mm-hmm. So he marches straight up to her and he says, listen, I just watched my friend die and she had nobody, no family, but she only had us and we were enough. Like, we loved her enough. And he's like, just so you know, they're enough for me too. And it's like, you could love me or not, take it or leave it. But like, I love you for who you are, just like I love me for who I am. And I was like, fuck me up. They've been doing like the queer storylines are great. Natsuki's like portrayal of depression and shit like that is fucking and like her near suicide is so well done. Flanagan is a genius when it comes to these side plots that another horror fucking person could never.
It's truly amazing. I mean, I care so much about these characters. I've been saying it since the beginning. This is probably my favorite ensemble of characters for any of the Flanagan shows. Like, I was already all in by episode 2 or 3 for these characters, where everyone else it took a little bit longer. It's just, and for the amount of people that it's covering too, it feels like a bigger cast of main characters, and everyone gets their time to shine. Like, this scene was also slightly influenced by the earlier Spencer and Sandra episode. You know, they even go as far as to the little kiss on the head that he gives Sandra when he forgives her completely. So that was a good callback. But it seems like that's good closure for his character. We got good closure for Natsuki's character in this. Sherry got her time, a little bit of time to shine. It seems like we're kind of gearing up to now it doesn't matter if someone dies because we did get a full story. Kevin seems off the table right now. And Alanka and Kevin, I feel like, are safe until the finale.
Is Sherry the only one we haven't gotten a story from yet?
Pretty much.
And no, Sandra did tell a story. But in the beginning, they said that Sandra's the only one who hasn't told a story yet, right? Or was that Sherry?
No, that was Sherry.
Oh, fuck. That's going to be epic. Whatever her story is going to burn the house down. It's got to. I'm wondering,
it needs to be next episode, though, right? Like, it has to be episode 9, it feels like.
Why would they tee us up like that and not give us just like a fucking slam dunk of a story, you know, to be like, she hasn't. She's like, I'm workshopping. Leave me alone.
It does seem like he did a lot of focus on her, though, these two episodes, giving her stuff. So if he doesn't get around to giving her her story, at least we got some backstory on her rather than us just being unsatisfied about it. But yeah, I'm hoping that I just don't know how we're going to get into a position where we can have another Midnight Club meeting and things are normal. It feels like we're past that point. The library door is being locked.
Yeah.
Shit's in chaos. Anya's dead. Someone's about to leave and be healed. It doesn't feel like we're going to get a chance to really do this again. I was shocked that we got one in the form of a mesh in Natsuki. And yeah. I was very happy that we did. Do we want to start talking about that yet? Or do we have anything else to cover?
Yeah, one quick thing is that it's a girl who's cured. That's all we know. That she says she. So it's either Natsuki, Alanka, Sandra, or Sherry. Those are the options of who could go home. And I do think it's actually Alanka.
But she was just saying no, not to give the hope thing.
This is where, Luke, I was thinking about the timeline, because I'm like, okay, so since the ritual, people have had to get blood work done or get scans done or something in order for someone to call and be like, it's a miracle. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it wouldn't be the next day. They don't have any scans or tests, you know? So it's a girl. It's a girl. That's all we know. And Stanton locked the door. So then we get a mesh going on a late night walk. He bumps into Natsuki and he's sweet and is like, if you need to dump me, it's okay. Life's too short to be with someone you don't want to be with. And she flips the script totally and is like, fuck no. Not only do I want to be with you, but you need to hear this story because I really want you to get to know the actual me. So we get a 2-person midnight club. She's so nervous just because she wants to let him in. That's why she was anxious all day in the room and didn't want to see him, because she was kind of building up the courage to tell the story. And he's so sweet about it. And he just holds her hand and road to nowhere. So say we're at the second gas station. What are your thoughts? What's going on?
Well, first of all, hell yeah, Henry Thomas. That was
our boy.
He probably had so much fun with this role.
Right.
It was incredible. Like, just seeing him like trying to be this rocker hitchhiker guy who's
so good.
Kind of red herringly being shown as a serial killer. Like, that's what Flanagan wants you to think a little bit. This is maybe my favorite story. It's probably a little bit behind Amesh's with Raul, but this might be my second favorite of the show just because I felt like I was tripping. Like, I had no idea what was going on. These loops are happening. It was pretty obvious that the other hitchhiker they kept passing was her, was Natsuki in some form. And it kept getting more and more like ghost-like every time they passed. It was just so trippy. And the girl in the back was freaking out. Like, she just, her way of delivering lines and like giving directions to her was so creepy. Everything about this was awesome.
The one thing I did write was angel and devil on her shoulder. I don't think they're real, but I had no clue that she was just stuck in the tripping out on carbon monoxide and gas and shit like that. Like, that did not come in my head, but I did write angel and devil on her shoulder because the whole time he's like, keep going. She's like, no, you got to stop and all this stuff. So it had to be that in some form, but I was not sure how or why. But who is she? I didn't want to IMDb it because I recognize her. So I thought she was maybe Poppy from Hill House for a second. It's not. Poppy is actually the girl in the basement, the original Regina.
Okay, that makes sense. I can picture that in my head.
Because we did recognize her. So I think someone said, who is that? I recognized her on one of the pods. And I was like, I actually don't know. So I've been really strict about not IMDbing, but I went the opposite way where I looked through Hill House. And then it actually didn't spoil me. It just said Regina. So it's fine.
Yeah. I really don't know if she was somewhat, because I was looking at her so much too, thinking if she was in anything else of the Flanagan verse or even just in general, but I don't think I knew who she was. But her just on-screen chemistry with Henry Thomas was just, it was awesome. It was awesome to see them electric, just fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really good. And I was dying laughing at the second stop when Henry Thomas just comes out of the thing screaming, go, 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 go. Like, and he was just like, we gotta get the fuck out of here. That's so freaking good.
You know who I think she is? Is she the one in Midnight Mass who is slowly aging? Like the younger girl who ends up slowly aging to be the old woman?
You mean the old woman who reverse ages? Yes. Yeah, it's like the opposite.
I think that's her.
It's Dr. Sarah's mother, right?
Mom, yeah. I think that's actually her. But
it
anyway.
It could have been.
Yeah, they were. This was great. And I didn't know what was hitting the car. I was like, what are these apples falling from the sky? But the green haze, the fog, she's like sweating. It's cool. It's like a lucid dream she's having. And then, but her brain is like adding fun things around it. But yeah,
this is also explanation for her ritual sacrifice. Like these are the car key. I think it was literally the keys in that she used. I remember Natsuki saying, I want Anya to have some of the luck I had that day. And basically what that's saying, I guess, is what happened in real life was her mom coming in and saving her, even though she did get out of the car. So I guess that was her whole thing. And that made a lot of sense. And it made that hit harder.
Yeah. I'm surprised there wasn't any sort of trigger warning on this episode, actually, like a suicide prevention trigger warning.
They did that at the end.
Oh, they did? My Netflix must have hit next, or maybe I had paused like too quick, because I'm like so quick to be like, don't show me anything after we're not allowed. But I mean, she really, really, truly thought she didn't want to live. Like, she is explaining depression to a T. I mean, for people who have it, it's great representation of her just being like, I really thought it. I truly believed it. And now that I'm alive, I'm dying anyway, but just slower, which is just fucking life is terrible. Life can be so terrible. And I love her so much. That makes me so sad. I thought actually, I forgot what her sickness was. I thought she was going to say the poison, like the poison she got from the car was going to slowly kill her. Like, I thought maybe it formed from that.
Me too.
I took it as she went in because of that, but then they ended up finding cancer in the...
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Our girl. Love her. She's the best.
So now, I really wish she got to tell that to the whole Midnight Club, because it would have been great to see everybody's reaction to that story. Because that was the most like one for one real symbolism story, I think. Like, everything has been like that, but this was pretty damn on the nose, and it would have been cool to see everybody else's reaction to it. But I guess they're going to be good after this, because now she quote unquote like let him in, and now they're going to be like as close as they've ever been.
They were going to check something off the thousand things before you die list.
I thought it was possible.
But yeah, okay. So we wrap the episode with Alanka hearing a woman crying or a girl crying. She gets on the elevator, sees the old lady in the basement. Kevin, this fucking sketch bag. Now from that reaction, I truly think he doesn't know what's happening. But I also think that he kind of knows he has something to do with something. And that's why he's been trying to get Alanka off the trail for so long, because he's trying to keep her out of it. Maybe one, he has no clue what's happening and he's like nervous that he's going to get caught. Or two, he kind of does have an idea what's happening and he's trying to keep her out of it. I don't know.
So this is very Dusty like, right? Like, it's almost a good parallel for that. Cause he's like being controlled and we don't know where he's getting his orders on killing. Just a quick question before I keep going into it, though. Is Dusty like, is the scene with Dusty smashing Sheila on the head or Alanka on the head in the coma vision of Anya, is that, you think, all we're going to get on the end of the Dusty storyline? Like, that it was just to pay off, like make that kind of make sense?
I don't know. I hope not.
Because I'm thinking now, we don't have time for Sherry's story. We can't finish the witch story from Alanka. We can't finish Dusty's story. I don't know if we're going to get the conclusion to all of them. It doesn't really feel like we have enough time for that, because we're going to get a lot of stuff happening in real life rather than just storytelling in these next two episodes. So maybe that is the end of Dusty's thing. And it kind of gets played out also with reveals about Kevin. And that might be satisfying enough, but it is sad that we're not going to really like see the end of that.
I think we get it. I think we get the end. There's no way that that's the end. I can't believe that.
Yeah. I mean, you could be right.
Yeah, no, you could be right. I mean, that would be a little unsatisfying for me. I honestly want to see Sheila take him down. And I think that's where the story's going, right? Because genuinely, I think if Kevin like is telling the story based on kind of what's happening around him, Alanka is so smart. I don't think he's going to like, I don't think he thinks he has it over Alanka. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? What are your final theories on like Kevin in general?
This is a good question, because when he says, "Oh God, not again," like that's so telling in itself that he's the couple of times we have seen visions of when Alanka's tripping out and then it turns into Kevin means like it was really Kevin doing that. Yeah. I don't know what he could have even been doing in the basement by himself though. Like, is he just straight up sleepwalking and it doesn't matter what he's doing? He was the one sitting in like over Anya in the bedroom. And like, he's the one, he's just always him. I guess that's fine, because he was also the one we kept getting visions of as having the ghost face by on the bench by the lake, like in the beginning couple of episodes. I don't know. I really don't know how it could work, because like he truly was a kid in a high school and he did go to like prom and stuff. So it's weird.
I think my question is why Kevin, you know, like why, if he's not some, like if he didn't have this happening to him before he got to, like he was a regular high school kid, he has a girlfriend and a mom, he ran track, he has a little brother. Like if that wasn't, like, why is it him now? And why did Alanka recognize him before they even got there? You know, there's something.
I mean, well, Alanka's makes more sense because she saw the vision of him on the bench.
Right.
Like in the first episode. Okay. But him recognizing her means to me that he probably remembers flashes when he is being possessed by that doesn't make sense though, because he couldn't have been in the mirror at the party physically.
So only the man was at the mirror, which is the weirdest part of all of this. Cause why, like it, maybe Brightcliff does call to certain people, right?
Yeah.
Like the reason she searched for it is because, I don't know. By that point, she didn't even know she had cancer.
I know. It's like, how the fuck does it make sense? How does it all fit together? This one's tough, man.
I know. It's hard to give theories on that.
One thing I want to bring up though is that's true. I thought for a second that when she gets into the elevator by herself, I thought the twist was going to be something where she goes to, it was going to like end on her clicking the basement, like the morgue, because we haven't really been there, right?
We have not.
Like the actual basement. So maybe there's something there that's important, but then it just skipped right to the ritual room again. It's like, okay, was the basement thing never going to be like a plot point and they were just scaring her in the first episode and it is just all about the basement room? But I don't know. I wanted something crazy to happen, like with like dead bodies down there or something.
Yeah. The morgue could, I agree with you that could be a point, or the other half is like, they just want it to again, remind you that this is a place where people die all the time.
It's true.
But I mean, they did make it a big thing. So the elevator was like confusing me. I thought she was already in it for a second and then she wasn't. I don't know. I was like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden she was in the basement. So I was like, okay, fine. But you wouldn't catch me in a billion years going to that basement by myself. That is hell.
I'd rather die. That's literal. Yeah,
just... yeah, me too. I feel like we had some good theories with Al. I mean, what are our main questions before we leave? Like, is who is Stanton? Who is Shasta?
Yep.
Why is Kevin involved? We want a Sherry story. We want the end of Kevin's story. These are our wishes for the next two episodes. Anything else?
I think we'll just might as well put it on the board of our final guesses for who Stanton and Shasta are. Because might as well.
I think you sold me on her being on Stanton being Athena.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I think
too.
You sold me on that.
There's like I said, there is an argument for her being Julia, but it feels stronger that Stan is the daughter of Shasta for me. Like, I feel like that's a very Flanagan thing to do and it would work. And I don't see any plot holes with it timeline wise. works out in my head.
Wait. You said who was the daughter?
Stanton would be the daughter.
Of Shasta,
Regina. Yeah.
That's giving, again, magicians. It's giving like Harriet and Zelda vibes, where like Zelda is, like they look the same age or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damn. Okay. I love that. So, okay. Yes. Sold. Signed. Co-signed.
Yeah.
Stanton. Stanton is
Athena.
Athena and Jewel or
Shasta.
So no
Regina.
One's Julia. Who's Julia?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, there's three characters, and two, at least Regina should be dead if she doesn't have some form of immortality or longer life expectancy, which we assume she does from the ritual. So that keeps her in play. And then Athena and Julia can just be alive just based on the timeline. So they can just totally be characters. That's what makes it complicated, because someone's got to not be one of those two characters.
I don't know. I think I would be happier. I would be happier to see Julia and Athena. I like, if any of them were going to be left out, I feel like Regina should be the one that's left out, because we need to see Julia. We need to see Julia.
So in that case, Julia would still be Shasta for you.
Yeah. Julia is Shasta. Because
now, is there anything there that doesn't work?
Well, I mean, this goes back to
my thing about her. Why would she care about the journal is my thing. And that's what's keeping me on Regina. I'm sticking with Regina.
You mean Gina Ballard? GB.
Gina Ballard, GB. Hell yeah.
Okay. I love it. I'm sold.
All right. Do we want any final guess on Kevin? Because it sounds like, based on our conversation, we don't know.
I think we don't know. I think we just need to watch.
Yeah. I'm cool with that. I'm ready to freaking go. Next time we're all together is going to be the first time since the pilot where we're actually is going to be all four of us. I'm sure next one will be a little bit longer. This one was a little bit shorter because we're kind of just putting the chess pieces into play for the final act or final sprint here. We still need to find Hot Mama because she hasn't been anywhere yet.
Kate, Hot Mama, and Hamish. We didn't find any of them. All three of them are in the series.
I forgot
at some
Kate's going to be in there too. Yeah.
Doesn't make, I am looking. Why would they show up to be a background character? They need to be something else, but maybe they are just like walking behind. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm ready.
All right. That was episode 7 and 8 of The Midnight Club. We are crushing it so fast. It's such a good Flanagan show. He does not disappoint. If you like what you heard, give Binge on TV a follow. And I forget what I was saying on Twitter and Instagram. And you can go on bingetowntv.com or just scroll on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your podcast, to see all of our almost 300 episodes now. We cover a fuck ton of shows. If you're in the middle of The Midnight Club and you're missing the rest of the Flanagan shows, go back. You can listen to our Hill House coverage, our Bly coverage, and our Midnight Mass coverage. We did all of them. We had a blast. It's really the same crew, me, Luke, Paul, Jimmy, with some special guests along the way, other Bingetown members. That's all I got. Next time we're going to be hitting the finale and we're going to say, wow, we're stupid. Or we're going to say, wow, we crushed that. So I can't wait. We are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
Boom.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.